About 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we met through letter writing. And I told him, Bill, when you get a chance, come on over to church. He showed up, and he hasn't left. And he's become such a special friend to me. And he's going to give the first half of the sermon. Anybody ever watch the tag team wrestling? And so, well, I'm going to sit down, put it out, slap my hand. And you go over, and then when you're done, I'll come up and slap my hand. Okay?
Sounds good.
So we're wrestling people here.
Can you hear me with this? This is the first for me, so it's a special time, and I'm blessed to have everyone here from my Christian Covenant community and my family here with me to support me as I give this so-called brief sermon. Jess contacted me and he said, I'm going to give you 15 to 20 minutes to speak. So we have a couple rules, just like Jess does, you know, at the beginning of this, he gives you rules and announcements. Well, there's a couple rules. First of all, everybody turn off their cell phones and put their watches in their pocket. That way, you don't know if I go over 20 minutes. So we'll take care of that part of it, first of all. Second of all, my family's here with me, and just like me, they're recovering Catholics. And being new as a Christian, my son asked me yesterday, what kind of church is this? I said, well, it's a Christian church. And he said, well, what is that? Is it like Baptist, or is it Lutheran, or is it Methodist? And not knowing how to answer, because I'm relatively new as a Christian, that it's a Christian church. Okay, so I left them in the blank. They came in blind to our Christian church. But after thinking about it, I came up with the answer. This is basically like a family brunch. I mean, we come together as a community every Sunday to get together to worship God and to interact as friends, as family. And after thinking about it, I thought that was probably the best way to describe what coming to church here is like. So with that being said, let us pray. Father God, I pray that through my words today, you may inspire and remind everyone here today that we don't have control of our lives, that you, Lord, have a plan for us. And your plan for us may not always be that clear. Let us take time today to look at our lives and remind ourselves that it is because of our faith in you and your love for us that we have all things in life. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. I had a different name for what I was going to talk about today, and Jess had a different name for what I was going to talk about today, but since he's the boss, I'll talk about what he asked me to. And he asked me to say that the title of my talk today was How to Bring Jesus into Your Conversation, which is something that is very difficult in a lot of different ways, simply because you don't want to be intrusive in someone's life. You need to feel them out and understand where they are with God or in their walk with God, and what their faith is. And to give you an idea, as Jess said, I'm relatively new to Christianity. And I want to give you a brief explanation of my life. I've talked to you before. I gave you a little bit of my testimony. But for most of you, or for many people, COVID was a total disaster. And because of COVID, you know, you may have lost a loved one, or you may have suffered and had an illness and had a very tough time. But for me, COVID was a true turning point in my life. On March 28th, 2020, I was introduced to Christianity. I met a lovely woman sitting on a rock in a park where I was working. And we struck up a conversation, and she asked me, did I believe in God? And of course. I said, of course I believe in God. What else was I going to say? You know? And she says, well, are you a Christian? I said, no, I'm a Catholic. We know everything about God. We know that don't bother. Yeah, you can tell me about Christian and God and who he is and how wonderful he is. But I'm a Catholic. I've been raised a Catholic. I've been a Catholic for 50-some years. So don't tell me anything about God. I know everything I need to know about God. Well, let me say that I really didn't know much about God being raised as a Catholic. We went to church and we did things. And that also, I forgot to mention that because my family's here and they weren't sure what kind of church it was, I think we're going to do a couple things a little bit different here this morning. Okay? First of all, we are going to kneel occasionally. All right, so every now and then I'll ask you to stand up and then kneel down so they feel more at home like it's being a Catholic. Because if you've been to a Catholic church, you kneel and stand, and people that aren't Catholic don't really understand that whole concept. Second thing of all is we're going to take up the second offering. So the first offering was for the church and for God and for everyone to do good and well at that. Usually in the Catholic church, they take up a second offering to pay salaries and take care of the church. So just to make them feel good, we're going to do that. And then at some point, we're going to throw in a little bit of incense to make everybody feel good. But what happened as a result of me recognizing that as a Catholic, I was missing out a lot on God was that I gave in to Satan, the works of the flesh. I began to drink heavily. And there would be days that I would go on benders and drink and not what was really going on. And I would say possibly I was a functioning alcoholic, if there is such thing as a functioning alcoholic. You know, I'd get up and do the best I could with work and go on with my day and, you know, go to bed or come home. And the first thing I'd want to do is have a drink and drink until I fell asleep and get up the next day. And you do that on and on and on and on. And during that time period, I said to Caroline, he said, my brother John has changed. But I don't understand what happened. I mean, he's very calm and he's very more outgoing and more loving and more inspirational. And it's like, where did this come from? You know, I grew up with my brother and we were close, but not that close. But, you know, it was something clicked. It's like, I want to be like that. And lo and behold, I find out that he became a Christian and he joined Christian Covenant Community. And just through his inspiration, his action, which is something that we have to do as a Christian. You know, Jess has talked to you about discipleship, and we've talked about discipleship. And being a true disciple is not just coming to church and, you know, praying to God one day a week. Being a true disciple is walking the walk and talking the talk. If you're going to be a disciple, you have to do that. You have to be that person that shows outwardly, not, you know, excessively in most instances, but you have to show that you love God and that will come out in you and people will recognize that. I can guarantee you that. And many of you do that, but just saying, hi, how are you today? How was your day? If you have a problem, taking a few minutes to talk to them about, you know, what their problem was. Well, because I wanted that, I decided to put myself into rehab. And in March of 2023, I put myself into rehab at Marburg Rehab Facility up in the Scranton area. And I spent 21 days in rehab, and it was a great experience. I learned a lot about myself. I learned about the 12-step program. I was with other people that were suffering not only from alcoholism, but from drug addiction. And I'm sitting there, and in my own arrogant way, I'm saying, well, I'm not these people. I'm not these people. I don't have that problem. I can continue to drink a little bit socially here and do that and carry on just like I did, just like I used to. So I met people in there, and they were talking about it, and anybody that's familiar with the 12-step program, it deals with, the ultimate thing is to give yourself to a higher being. And they don't, I guess to be politically correct, they don't say to God, but to a higher being. And while I was in there, I talked to quite a few people that struggled with that whole concept. I don't believe in God. I can't give myself to a higher being. Well, so I would talk to them and say, well, do you believe that everything in your life is influenced by something else, that there's something, can you tell me of an instance that something happened today or something happened yesterday that you had no control over and it just worked out? I mean, I can give you an example today. I, this morning at 6 o'clock, almost called Jess and said, I can't do this sermon. The reason being, my family will attest to this. On Friday, I could barely move my right shoulder. I pinched a nerve or something, and it felt like somebody was pounding a stake into my shoulder. And yesterday, I went fishing with my two sons, and I was in pain most of the day. I was, whoops, there goes, 10 minutes off my sermon. But, you know, I was in pain most of the day. I was eating ibuprofen like candy. I was taking ice packs out of the cooler there where we had our bottled water while we were fishing and putting it on my shoulder. Driving home last night in the rain through the construction, I was in severe pain. Last night, I couldn't sleep at all. I'm trying to, you know, take anti-inflammatories, hot packs, cold packs. And at 6 o'clock this morning, I said, this isn't going to work. I can't do this. I can't stand up there in pain. So I said a little prayer. I said, God, please give me the strength and the power to power through this so that I can come and to give the sermon this morning. And within 15 minutes, there's no pain. Look, absolutely amazing. So, you know, God acted in many different ways. But like I said, I was arrogant. And I got out of rehab and everything was good and happy and, you know, life went on and I wasn't drinking. And, you know, on the 20th of August that same year, several months, Jess had been writing me letters when I was in rehab, and that's how he introduced himself. And after that, I came back and I came to church here a couple times and I decided that I wanted to get baptized. Now, you know, as a Catholic, I was baptized at 2 weeks old because we had to be baptized right away because if something happened to us, we weren't going to go to heaven. We were going to go to purgatory. And if you think about that, why would an innocent little baby who has done nothing in life get stuck in purgatory just because they weren't baptized? And in the Catholic Church, that was just the way it was, and you didn't really understand what baptism was. So, you know, in talking to Jess and talking to other Christians that I met, understood what baptism was. And Ed and Dan, you won't believe this, but that little stream right over there that you drove by on the way in, that's where I got baptized. Dunked down and brought back up and washed and brought into this Christian world. And, you know, I thought that was great. You know, everything's good. I'm going on and on and on. If we read in Galatians, they talk about two things. First of all, they talk about the works of the flesh, which are basically sin. You know, and we as Christians, as human beings, are bound to sin occasionally. I'm sure there's some of us that don't sin ever, but I find that hard to believe. Okay, they don't belong to this church. That's the one down the street, up on the hill. But we talk about that, and you think about the works. Just and I succumb to the works of the flesh. Things like jealousy, things like wrath, where I became angry for no reason at all, really, if I sat down and thought about it. Why was I angry? Why was I jealous? Why was I drinking again? So I will succumb to that. And if we go to Peter 5:8, he describes it very quickly. I don't know if we can get it up on the screen here or not. But Peter says, be sober-minded. Be watchful. Your adversary, Satan, prowls like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Well, guess what? I was that someone. I succumbed to the works of the flesh. Jealousy, wrath, drunkenness. Hey, I'm a prime candidate here. You know, it's like that Satan says, all right, I got this guy. I got three things on him, and I'm going to devour him. And didn't he do that? In a drunken stupor, after kicking Jess out of my house, kicking my brother out of my house, kicking my sons out of my house, I made it, for some reason, a friend of mine called me or texted me And for some reason, I made a very stupid statement to him, who was also an alcoholic and had also gone through the same things with me. I sent him a text back saying, "Guess what, George? I just got a new 357 Magnum revolver. Never shot it. And what I'd like to do is put that first bullet through that gun into me." Well, George, who, like I said, is an alcoholic and who has gone through similar things, and who is also the coroner for Center County, immediately called 911, unbeknownst to me. What happens next? Well, I'm laying there in bed in a drunken stupor, in my pair of shorts and a t-shirt. Phone ring. Oh, okay, answer the phone. "Hello, this is the state police. Is this Joe Gallagher?" I said, "Yeah, what can I do for you?" He said, "We're going to be there in a couple minutes. Would you mind meeting us at the front door?" Okay, what did I care? I didn't know what I was doing anyway. So sure, I'll meet you at the front door. I meet him at the front door. He says, "Do you have any guns in the house?" I said, "Sure, I'm a hunter. I have, I don't know, 10 or 12 long guns and a couple handguns." He said, "Well, can you step away from the door?" He said, "Oh, I can go in and show you the guns." He said, "No, please step away from the door." And at that point, put my hands behind my back and handcuffed me. Never been in handcuffs before in my life. And I can tell you, it hurt. They put that cold steel on your arms, and there I am standing out on a gloomy Sunday morning in the middle of my front yard, three cruisers parked in front of my house, my neighbors going by my house, weaving through the police cars to get by so that they could go to church. Most of them were Catholic, but they were going to church. And there I am standing in handcuffs, no shoes, just in a t-shirt and a pair of shorts. Kind of humiliating, don't you think? Well, I complained. I said, "You're hurting me. I can't stay like this with my hands behind my back." And he was nice enough. They put me in the cruiser, took the handcuffs off and handcuffed the front of me, and took me up to the hospital. Well, they take me from the hospital. When I get there, take everything that I have, which wasn't much, my shorts and my t-shirt, made sure I had nothing that I could strangle myself with or stab myself with, put me in a pair of scrubs, put me in a little cubicle room with nothing on the walls, except, and in the center of the room was a, I don't know what it was, a plastic, it looked like a pommel horse, if you know what they look like, and that's what I was to stay with. Then a nurse pushed the door closed, pushed the desk against it, and sat there. And I sat in that room. Nobody told me anything, didn't know what I was going to do. So I sat there, and then, you know, you have to ask to go to the bathroom, and then they would escort you to the bathroom and follow you in and this and that. 2 o'clock in the morning, I get a call from somebody in the psychiatric ward in the hospital saying, "Well, we have to admit you. You have two choices. You can deny treatment, or we're going to admit you. If you deny treatment, you're going to have a police record, and you're going to have a psychiatric record and all this other stuff, or we can send you to a hospital for help." I said, "Well, that's a no-brainer." I said, where am I going to go? I figured somewhere close. Well, they said, "We have two hospitals. We can send you to the Friends Hospital in the Bronx, or we can send you to the Friends Hospital in Philadelphia." Okay, I figured, well, Philadelphia is better than the Bronx. Can I do anything wrong with that? So I sat in my little cubicle room for another 8 or 9 hours with nothing to eat. And finally, they said they're going to take me. So this guy comes and they take me in a limo. Drive me to the Friends Hospital, which is in Center City, the dregs of Philadelphia. Absolutely dregged. And they pull in the backside of the hospital. And if anyone's seen the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that was my first impression. The backside of the hospital is completely run down. The windows are broken out of the hospital. There's the smokestacks like that they have on the hospital. I'm thinking, oh my God, where am I going? What am I going to do? Where are you taking me? Take me around the front. Well, that looked nice. That was the pictures in their brochures. That looked real good. So I go to the entrance. They take me in the entrance. And they say, this woman comes to me, and not being as worldly as I think I am, this woman comes to me with her head all wrapped up, and I thought she was some kind of a, like a cloister nun being Catholic. Well, it turns out that Muslim. The whole hospital was run by Muslims. He says, well, you can't come in this door, sir. We're having an incident. Oh, okay. So they take me in the other door. I get over there. They hadn't declared it was an incident yet, but there was another young girl, completely out of her mind, took a chair and threw it through the window of the admissions desk. So three people came out, tackled her, took her off to wherever I know. So here I am. I'm down there. All I have is my scrub. They take me. They said, we're going to take you up to your ward. Where are you going to go? Well, I go up to my ward. And this is what I wanted to call this sermon, which was basically to hell and back. You ever been totally scared for your life? Think about it. You get scared if something can scare you. I was an adult man, arrogant, strong, totally in control of myself. Nobody could do anything to me. I was scared. They took me in. I sat down in a chair. Sitting next to me is this one woman they had brought off the street, high on crack. She had urinated all over herself and was sitting there in the chair, completely out of her mind, had no idea where she was. She stayed there for 2 days before they moved her. There was another guy that was walking around. He spoke Russian. Didn't speak to anybody else, but he paced always, all day long, talking to himself, screaming. And at night, he would scream to himself. There was another guy that was there. He was on Lord only knows what, but he talked about, you're a pedophile, and he was screaming and yelling, stay away from me. So Lord only knows what he was involved with. You know, and everyone in the place, they put you in at night, they let your door open because of fear that you're going to hang yourself or hurt yourself. So these people would wander in your room. They were wandering around all day long, so you didn't sleep at night. You ate, you walked like animals, step by step. Go to the cafeteria. The food was 9 times out of 10 cold because it was made earlier. They wheeled it up in a cart. So you had cold food. And it was like ravens. You sat down at your chair and people would come around and ask, can I take that? Can I take that? And if they wanted your food. It was absolutely scary. So here I am, not knowing what to do, scared out of my mind, realizing that I made a wrong mistake. So I said, well, the only thing that's going to help me is I need to pray to God to get me out of here in one piece, to get me home alive so that I can make my life better and be with my family and friends and make a life for myself. Anybody that knows me, I have hard enough time seeing. After 3 days of asking, this is what they gave me. This is my Bible. Yes, I'm sure you can read this. This is just like, yeah. And I didn't have glasses, so I'm sitting there in the middle of the community room, like this, trying to focus, and everybody's watching me. And they ask me, "What am I doing?" Well, I'm trying to read my Bible. I'm trying to get some peace in my life and have God help me out of this situation. And actually, some of them said, "Well, I'd like to read a Bible." So there were two or three that I actually was able to get a Bible for in less than 2 days while I was there. And the one girl, she couldn't read the Bible. She didn't have glasses. She said, I love to read the Bible, but I didn't have glasses. Well, they don't give them to you in there because you hurt yourself with glasses. So, you know, I started talking to them. And the one girl that was there that I said was next to me, I said, what are you going to do with your life when you get out of here? She says, well, I'm going home. My mother needs my check. And as soon as I get the check for my mother, I'm going back out on the street to live. I said, why would you do that? She goes, well, they're my friends. That's the only people that care about me in my life. My mother doesn't care about me except for my check. I said, you're a good person. And you deserve more than that. And we prayed, and we read the Bible. I read the Bible to her. She couldn't read real well, and I couldn't read real well either, but I had some verses memorized and was able to talk to her, and she said that she was going to try. I said, there's places that you can go to get help. But you don't have to go back out on the street. I said, you're going to be back in here, and they knew her by name. She had been in there 3 or 4 times before. you know, it was a revolving door just to do this. So just by making contact with these individuals, it was a way of finding a commonality to help them. There was one guy in there also who was Russian, didn't speak a lick of English. Caroline knows some Russian, so I asked her some things to I could say to him. I would sit with him for hours and talk to him. He'd just nod my head, and I would, you know, we'd make like I understood him. And he was so appreciative. His family had left him in there. They didn't want him. So he was there. He was stuck. And he didn't speak the language, and he had nobody to help him. There was another man that was in there that shouldn't have been in there, but they had nowhere else to put him. And because of the system, they couldn't put him in a nursing home, and he should have been in a nursing home. I would wheel him around in his wheelchair and talk to him and pray to him about God and how to feed him. He couldn't feed himself. He couldn't break up his food. And none of the staff there would help him. Absolutely none of them. I got in trouble for the Russian guy. I gave him a bath or shower three times while I was there, and they yelled at me. They said, "That's not your place to do that." Well, I said, "Well, you're not doing it." They would sit in their room, and the poor guy, he would urinate on himself. And he had a problem. He had, if he's still alive, I would, God bless him, because to get him out of his pain. He must have had prostate cancer or something, but his prostate was the size of a grapefruit. And in the hospital, he would try to put the pens on so he wouldn't make a mess. He was a very proud man. And I would help him get his shower. And I said, "Yuri, you got to put your pens back on." And he fought me. I said, I went to the desk and said, "The man cannot wear small pens. He needs extra large." They said, "We don't have any more on our ward." I said, "Are you kidding me? This is a whole hospital. You don't have anything like that?" And everybody was cheering me because I'm yelling at the nurses to get this man help. Guess what? I made enough noise that he got his large pens, and everything was fine after that. But, you know, again, we as Christians have to speak up for those that are less fortunate. And that's part of our discipleship. And that's what I said to you in the very beginning. You have to walk the walk and talk the talk. And if you speak the word and you talk to individuals and just make yourself, put yourself out there, they will respond. I liken my whole journey to Paul. Now, we all know the story of Paul, actually Saul. Now, Saul was a real bad guy, real bad guy. I mean, as Christians, we want to hang around him because he'd probably end up as a hobby. What he did was, you know, torture us and kill us or do whatever, but that was his hobby. Now, all of a sudden, the Lord reaches out and said, "Well, let's change Saul. Let's make him one of us." And Christians are saying, what are you talking about? I mean, this guy's going to kill me if I go up there to try to help him. So I likened it to say that in Timothy, 2 Timothy 2:9, "For which I am suffering, bound with chains as a criminal, but the word of God is not bound." I use that as part of my testimony because I was bound as a criminal when I was in that hospital. But I was able to use the word of God to reach individuals. I mean, it was actually very emotional for me, and I cried, and just about everybody else in that room, the 20 or 30 other people, "We're going to miss you, Joe," and they all came up and gave me hugs. "You were like our father. You were here to take care of us. You talked to us." Other people didn't. Like I said, it was community raised, and run primarily by Muslims. Very interesting. Primarily raised by Muslims, or run by Muslims, and then the counselors were Jewish. So you go in, and it was a very, very strange situation. But, you know, I was able to reach them. Then if we go on into Acts 9:8, Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. You know, God struck Saul off his horse and knocked him to the ground, and he was blinded. I was blinded by alcohol. I was blinded by jealousy. I was blinded by wrath, all works of the flesh. And by being blinded, I didn't know where I was or what I was doing or anything like that. And that's something that I liken to Paul's inspiration. And if we go on into the Acts 9 through 18, immediately something like scales fell from Saul's eyes and he could see again. He got up and was baptized. My scales were removed when I received this tiny little Gideon Bible and was able to read that, and this was my salvation. I was able to sit and read. This is the only thing I had in the whole place. Occasionally, I'd be able to make a phone call, but this was it. So by reading the Bible and reading some of the very inspirational verses in Psalms and Proverbs, I could relate my life to what Paul had gone through and improve my life and feel safe to get through that. Then if you go on into Romans 1:16, it says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jew and then to the Gentile." You can't be ashamed of the gospel. That is the basis. Oh, there goes another 10 minutes. That is the basis of our foundation in faith, the gospel. All of us have faith, I would believe, because we're here on Sunday. But that is the true foundation of us being disciples of the Lord. Now, what we do with that foundation is our decision. And if you go on into Matthew 4:19, and he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." Right here. Inspiration. Jess and I went on this trip with my son Ed. It was probably 6 months after I met Jess. That was that very fall. It was in the fall of 21-22. And there, if you look in there on the right-hand side, that handsome man with the hat holding his arm, that's Jeff. He's a fisher of men. He's the reason that I'm here. He's the reason that maybe many of you are here. Because he has devoted his life to Christ, and because of that, he willingly goes out and reaches men. He's a fisher of men. He's also a pretty good fisherman, as you can see in the picture. But as I said, the foundation of your discipleship is faith. What you do with that faith is the next step in Christianity and being a true disciple. And that is learning, gaining knowledge through reading the Bible, from coming to church, to understanding what our role here on earth is, and trying to understand or following God's plan for us here. And the third step would be steadfastness in that. You know, that we just don't do it now and then. It goes back to walking the walk and talking the talk. You need to do it all the time. Not today, and oh, well, I think about it. Oh, 2 weeks from now, I forgot to pray today. And I can say it. Other examples. I'm a fisher of men, I guess. I'm trying to be a disciple, and the reason that I consider myself a fisher of men is because one of my favorite pastimes is fishing. As many people will attest, especially my sons and my brother and Caroline, we went 2 weeks ago to New York fishing. We were supposed to go up for brown trout. Well, the weather forecast was absolutely horrendous. Now, they're calling for high winds, and we kept looking at the weather report and all of this. And we invited my ex-father-in-law, their grandfather, to go with us on this trip. He turned 80, and he likes to fish, too. And I figured, well, it'd be nice to get him to come along with us. So unbeknownst to my sons or to my father, ex-father-in-law, I said a prayer to myself. I guess it was kind of not childish, but sheepish-like, because I should have said the prayer with them. But I said a prayer. I said, "God, make this trip worth something, that I can spend quality time with my sons and my ex-father-in-law and make this enjoyable." He had never gone fishing for lake trout. My sons had never gone, or I had never caught a lake trout, but the weather was absolutely going to be horrendous. Well, I said my prayer. We get up in the morning, get over there at 6 o'clock in the morning, looked at the forecast. There was a high winds advisory, small craft advisory at 11 o'clock that day. No small craft allowed on the lake. But I said, Lord, please let us have this few hours so that we can enjoy our time together and make this trip worthwhile. Well, we pull out of the port, or out of the harbor, and it's foggy. You can't see 100 feet. And there's no wind. The lake is like glass. Sounds like something you might have read in the Bible. You know, with Jesus, you go out on the lake and it's smooth as glass. Well, we go out smooth as glass. Well, the wind starts to pick up. Still can't see. We're catching fish. My ex-father-in-law was calling them by the minute. He said, well, 10:20, we're going to catch our last trout. Well, he was off by, what was it, 10 seconds? Something like that. We caught our last trout. Got our limit. And then we got one extra brown trout as a luck. We got off the lake. We started to get off the lake at 11 o'clock. What were they, 6, 8 foot swell? Probably by that time. I mean, the lake should have been shut down exactly at 11 o'clock. Up until that time, we were able to do that. And that was, God answered my prayer. The other thing was, is it was an enjoyable trip. We were the only boat out of 4 boats that went out that morning that got their limit of fish. The other boats maybe got 1 or 2. Say it's a miracle. You can say what it is, but it happened. I mean, on the same note, yesterday we were fishing. We watched the black cloud. That black cloud came to the end of the road, and Caroline and I have prayed for this when we were working. And I said, God, please let that cloud stop there. To myself, not out loud. Again, I should have probably done it out loud. But the cloud stopped. And we fished. We had a great day. We caught over 50 fish in a couple hours. We had a great time. We were laughing. We got all tangled up. It was a riot. But God answered our prayer. You know, if you think in your lives for all those little things that you just take, oh, that just happened. It's incidental. Ah, that happened. But if you think, why? Like I said at the beginning of this, God has a plan for us. We don't have a plan for us. And He makes that plan happen. We have no control over it. So we have to think about that and allow Him to guide us. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, we may question that. And if we use these three things, you know, the foundation of faith, our knowledge through Bible readings and interactions in Bible studies with other members of our church community, and we're steadfast in that, what will we get in the end? The very pinnacle, the very peak, our goal is love. That's at the very top of that pyramid as being a disciple. And in John 13, 34 through 35, it says, a new command I give you, to love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So we're called to be disciples. If we don't love each other as you would love yourself, you're not a true disciple. And I think we all want to be that disciple. And I think that's really important. And remember, the commandment to love God with all one's heart, soul, and mind, which was written in Matthew 22:37, that is the greatest. That is the greatest command of all, because it demands total devotion and encompasses all aspects of life. The love is what our ultimate goal is. Love one another. Show that compassion. My brother showed me that love, not by giving me hugs or you know, physical affection, but showing me love by just kind words, calling to check on me, for being there for me, to pick me up from my trip to hell. By the way, it costs $14,000 for 5 days in hell. I can give you the reservation if you want. Okay. Well, in case anybody wants to throw that out, everyone's gone on a short vacation. So, you know, remember that love is important. And probably the greatest verse in the Bible, I think we can all quote it if you want, is John 3:16. For God so loved the world, He gave His only Son, so that those who believed in Him shall not perish and have everlasting life. Now, if you think about that, You may be parents, you have sons, you have daughters. You could be a son or a daughter and you have a mother or a father. You could be on your own and have dogs that you love. Imagine if you were told you were going to give that one thing. I was never going to go fishing again. I was never going to go hiking again. I was never going to have that big piece of cheesecake again. I was going to give that up. Why? Because he loved us. He loved the world. And that is so important. And because he loves us, we will not perish. We will be part of his plan. He will guide us and he will be there for us. And because of that, we will have everlasting life. And that was the big thing when I was in rehab. Well, who's this eternal being? We're going to heaven. What is heaven? Who knows what heaven is? Heaven is that love, that joy, that togetherness that we have, that we're all going to share in heaven. You may not recognize me. I'm not going to have my black pants and my nice polo shirt on, but I'm going to be the same person in spirit. And that's what we are here on earth as disciples. We have to be that living spirit, that part of us, that part of our soul and our heart, that is the important part. Who cares what you look like? Who cares how you speak? Who cares anything about any of the physical attributes of life? Except that if those attributes or those things are done in a loving, God-like manner. If we do that, we are true disciples of God, and we will enjoy everlasting happiness with him in heaven. Thank you.
It is. It is now. And I said a big lettered Bible so I could read it. So I'm in pretty good shape, Joe. Thanks for the offer. You can keep that one. I got one verse you could put up, and I'll make this quick. But this is 1 Samuel chapter 2 verses. 1 Samuel 2, verses 29 through 30. And first thing that came to my mind was we have to reprogram our mind. Think of your mind as like this computer, and it's already programmed for whatever you wanted to put in there. And now you come to Jesus, and he says, I want you to live for me. How am I going to reprogram that into my mind? You want a hint how to do it? There isn't any hint. You can't do it. I can't do it. The only way we can have it happen is if we go to the master reprogrammer and say, change me. Make me start thinking like you. And example, a couple of examples. If I want to go shopping at Walmart or Aldi's groceries or whatever, and I go for that reason, I'm not reprogrammed. Because you know what I have to do as a Christian? If I'm going to those places, I have to be, the groceries has to be secondary, and the primary is I have to go fishing for men. Or women once a time. And if I go to a job, what do we see as our major reason for getting up and going to a job? Is it to earn a paycheck? Shouldn't be. God can take care of things if we put him first. And the reason we go to a job is to become fishers of men and witnessing to people around us all the time. If you go to school, the same thing. But it's something only God can do, but he'll do it if you ask him to do it. The second thing is this. We have to allow ourselves to learn how to be tuned in to God's Spirit. You know, if you have a radio, you know, you press just a little bit, you have another channel, a little bit, TV, the same thing. We have to learn how to adjust it into God's Spirit speaking to us. He wants to speak to us. And if we're tuned into Him, He'll do that everywhere we go, anytime we go. I'll use an example with my new friends over here, Eric. We had the pleasure of going out to lunch together about a week and a half ago. And we had a good time getting to know one another. But now you have to have some time to get to know this young lady. She'll amaze you. She amazes me pretty often. I'm very blessed. And this waitress came up to us. And she took our order. And I noticed, it'd be hard not to notice, she only had one hand. About right here, I think it was, right? Her hand was gone. And she was doing this waitering job, and she did an excellent job taking care of the three of us. And I felt, as soon as I seen her, I need to say something to her, to witness to her about Jesus. And my first thought is, I don't want to draw attention to her with her hand. That could be embarrassing or something. But I really wanted to do that, and I felt like I should. So I've had several words come to mind, a sentence, and every time I'd almost got out, I felt like God say, "Not now, Jess. Not now, Jess." So I just shut up. We were paying the bill and getting ready to leave the restaurant. And we were standing out there, and I felt like God said, "Now's the time." And so, "What's your name?" he said. And the local gal. And I said, "I noticed your hand. Let me tell you about a young lady that comes to our kids' camp. She's come about 3 years now. She only has one arm." Hers is only about like right here. "And she's the most amazing woman. And Randy, this will amaze you. Randy has three sons, and the one, Dylan, has come to camp about two or three times, 3 years. 2 years ago, he was at camp, and he has some physical problems, like an MS type of thing, or cerebral palsy, okay. And so he has a hard time walking. And we were here for our meeting, and it was time for us to be dismissed and go to our groups to go with our counselors. And I was standing at the door, and Dylan got taken out. I think he was in his little wagon at the time, and he was taken out. I think, Eddie, you were the one, I think, pulling that wagon for a week, and he loved you. I'm sure he still does. But there's a couple of teenage guys standing out there, and I heard him say something. "What is wrong with him? He has to go in a wagon." And right behind them was this girl who only had a half of an arm. So she walked out and said, "Guys, let me tell you something. There is nothing wrong with him. What's wrong is you guys have the wrong attitude about this lovely little guy." And I was going, "Go for it!" And
She was doing such a terrific job. I couldn't have done any better. So I told, let me tell you the story about this young lady in our camp. And she told that story about her girl with only half an arm. And she had only one hand. And she said, that's a beautiful story. You notice there are tears in her eyes. There's tears in my eyes. Just tell them that. And I said, are you a Christian? And she said, well, yes, I am. I said, where do you go to church? I don't go to church anywhere. I'm usually working, serving on Sunday morning. I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you a card right here. This is my name, Jess, and this is our address. I'm going to pray that sooner or later you get a Sunday morning off and you show up and you're going to sit up here with my wife and I, and you're going to have a terrific time. So it wasn't today yet, but it will happen. So you just never know. If you're tuned into God, God will bring those thoughts of how to do it, when to do it, and where to do it. I messed up this week, Beverly. There was a guy showed up from Bear Fuel who brought me my heating fuel. And I don't remember his first name. He's a younger guy. He's only been there for a year or so. But he says, you go to this church down here, Christian Covenant Community. Yeah, that's where I go. And there's a Beverly that goes there. I said, yeah, she's a really sweet young lady. And he said, young? She's sweet, but she's older than both of us. But I said, she's a very special lady. And we talked for a while. And then we said our goodbyes. And I got my check or my bill. And he left. And I thought, I never introduced him to Jesus. I messed up. So, see, you don't have to be perfect at doing this thing. You just have to allow God to guide you. And once in a while, you'll strike out. I struck out with that guy. You're going to have a better chance maybe next time. Or he's coming back again. I'll get him second time around. But you just have to be willing to love Jesus enough to say, change me. Help me tune in to your spirit. Now this verse up here, why do you kick at my sacrifice and at my offering, which I have commanded in my dwelling, and honor your sons above me by making yourself fat with the choicest of every offering of my people Israel? He was talking to this priest who put his sons before God, and they were robbing the kitty and lots of other things. And then it goes on, verse 30, therefore the Lord God of Israel declares, did I indeed say that your house and the house of your father will walk before me forever? But now the Lord declares, far be it from me. For those who honor me, I will honor, and those who despise me will be lightly esteemed. I want to be pleasing to God all the time. And I strike out sometimes, but God give me another chance with this guy. Sometimes you have to go out on the limb to make a witness. Did I go out on a limb speaking to that lady with the one hand? One, yeah, big time. I was a little nervous. You guys were probably thinking, no, just don't do this. But look how it turned out. You have to be willing to have the guts enough to go out on a limb and do what you feel God's laying on your heart. And even if you strike out, at least he knows you tried. Joe, you did an amazing job today. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of the few times that I've had to go out on a limb with you, because you were well worth it. You're such a special friend. You guys are blessed to have him as your dad. If you would honor him, he will honor you. And I would just, in closing, just encourage you to be open to God, even today, even after you leave, be open. God, what do I need to be more faithful in honoring you? One word answers. Give me a couple. Doesn't have to be you. You're talking about the person sitting next to you anyway. How about how I treat my kids? How about how I treat my spouse? How about how I have a witness in the area? How do I relate to my neighbors? Some of those things aren't always easy. I have some kind of mean neighbors, but I'm still trying to reach them for Jesus. You know the sacred cow? How about your finances? Don't touch that. There are all these different things you could say. If I would honor you with this, you said you would honor me. Who gets the better end of the deal? We all know the answer to that. So God, we have a lot to learn. I have a lot to learn as far as being a witness. And I'm trying to let you reboot. I'm trying to let you to reprogram my mind, putting you first in everything I do. And it's not always easy, but that's where I want to go, and that's where I want to be, and that's where I want to stay. Help us all to do that. Only you can help us. We can't do that on our own. But you want to help us to do that. Help us get some more front home runs more than strikeout. In Jesus' name, amen.